The following program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Fitchburg, Leominster, Lancaster, Lunenburg, Townsend, Ashby, Ashburnham, Devons, Westminster, Shirley, and Groton. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts and the Lions Clubs of Fitchburg and Lunenburg, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. During the next hour, we'll be reading from the Sentinel and Enterprise newspaper. This is Priscilla Lanigan, along with Stacey Lanier, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. Okay, first up today about local produce. Eagerness for fresh produce. Leominster and Lancaster Farms are offering summer harvest. Farm season is well underway, and the arrival of summer corn has locals happy to bring it home to their tables and grills. Both Gove Farm and Harper's Farm and Garden have an abundance of fresh, farm-fresh goodness up for grabs at their stands. Gove, at 930 Mechanic Street in Leominster, is currently picking zucchini, lettuce, beets, basil, cucumbers, parsley, kale, cut flowers, and they also have plants in hanging baskets. Over at Harper's, at 1539 North Main Street in Lancaster, they also have most of the above mentioned, plus peaches and other offerings such as asparagus, fennel, and rhubarb, to name just a few. And both farms have customers clamoring for their corn varieties that are always a huge hit and wildly popular during the warmer months. As always, weather plays a huge role in the success of farming, from planting to caring for crops to harvesting them. John Gove said that just like every year on a New England farm, this season seems out of the ordinary, but that is also what makes it normal. The harsh winter, roller coaster of spring, and extremely dry June all play into the challenge of growing produce in our region, the seventh-generation farmer said. This unpredictability, though, is also why we do what we do. No two seasons are the same, and we get to challenge ourselves to produce the same crops under ever-changing parameters. Dave Harper said that while overall it has been a pretty good growing season so far at the Lancaster farm that produces over 100 varieties of fruits and vegetables, as well as herb and vegetable plants, the fickle back-and-forth temps have been challenging. It was a cold spring, and we had to put out lots of row covers to protect the crops and keep them growing, but the heat waves mixed in, pushing the majority of the crops to ripen on time. He said of the Bounty at their fifth-generation 85-acre farm. They started picking corn at Harper's on June 29th, which Dave said is about normal for them. Dry years are always better for us with all our fields along the river, he said. We have extensive drip irrigation on all our fields to put the exact amount of water needed for each crop. Lisa and Paul Gove have been caring for their Leominster farm since taking it over from his parents in 1993, and their son John has been in the mix for many years now. The community, with their eagerness for fresh produce and curiosity for how the farm works, both allows us to be supported as a business and reminds us why we do what we do, which is produce good food for the local community, John said. Harper echoed his sentiments, saying, like all farms, their customers are their lifeblood and keep them going year after year, generation after generation. We always appreciate our community supporting the local farms in the area, he said. It has been a very busy start for the year for us. Not sure if it's because of the price of fuel and the higher prices at grocery stores this year, but it is always important to support all the local farms in the area to ensure access to locally grown food in the future. And let's see. From Fitchburg, City Council votes in favor of changing state flag. Image of sword over a Native American seen as offensive. After hearing from speakers, the Fitchburg City Council voted unanimously to support changing the Massachusetts flag and seal due to them being insensitive to Native Americans, making Fitchburg the 89th community in the state to vote for the change. Numerous residents and guests spoke about the negative impact of the images on the flag, state motto, and seal. The flag and seal portray an indigenous person beneath an arm holding a raised sword. The motto is Ense petit placidam sub libertate quietem in Latin, which translates to, by the sword we seek peace, but peace only under liberty. That, speakers said, alludes to the history of violence and colonization. Speakers on Tuesday included Roaming Buffalo, a descendant of the Wabanaki people and a citizen of the Abenaki Nation who spoke remotely. "I'm urging you to take up the matter," said Roaming Buffalo, about the issue that has been under review for years. "At the very least, remove the sword hanging over the figure of the indigenous person. It is a horrible reminder of the history of these lands and what happened to many, many indigenous people in the name of conquest and the doctrine of discovery. Stand with many others in the Commonwealth community who said this needs to go, and I'm asking on behalf of myself and all the indigenous people." Fitchburg High School student Diego Barahona attended the meeting to speak in favor of changing the image on the state flag, seal, and symbol. "A sword was the weapon raised against my ancestors in 1508 in Boracan, what we now know as Puerto Rico. A sword was the same weapon raised against my indigenous ancestors of Cuscatlan, which is known today as El Salvador," Barahona said. David Detmold, organizer of the petition drive, said, "Massachusetts stands for education and community among all people." He said voting to change the flag would send a message to the legislators, the 9 senators who are all white men, who said this is a waste of our tax dollars and we have more important things to do. He added, "It's a time for a better, unifying, aspirational flag that you in Fitchburg, all of us, can be proud to teach to our children." David Roth of Fitchburg, a longtime Human Rights Commission member, noted that though the commission hadn't formally taken up the petition, "it's really important for the city that I grew up in and came back to serve in and raise my family in that we take a stand to protect everybody, and as the symbol of our state, we should not be holding a sword over anybody." The petition was presented by Councillor Bernard Schultz, saying that the Advisory Commission has been working on this since 2024. The commission is hoping to have more Native American input on the proposed flag and seal designs. Council President Anthony Zarella said that when he first heard about this, his gut reaction was to be against it until he reviewed the past debates. But now he's supporting the resolution to send a message that Fitchburg wants a better symbol for the Commonwealth. The council unanimously approved the resolution. City Councilor at Large Sally Cragen contributed to this article, which was posted on the Fitchburg Central Facebook page. Okay. And let's see. An inspiring example of what we can achieve. Congressman Jim McGovern, Project Bread, kick off summer eats in Leominster. Project Bread and Congressman Jim McGovern recently launched the 12th annual Summer Food Rocks Tour, with stops at 2 Summer Eats meal sites in Central Mass. According to a press release, Monday, July 6th marked the first day of Summer Eats Awareness Week, and the day began with a breakfast at the Spanish American Center's summer camp location in Leominster, followed by a lunch at Unity Park in Turner's Falls. Summer Eats, the Massachusetts Summer Food Service Program, provides free meals to children and teens 18 and under at numerous sites across the Commonwealth throughout the summer. In 2025, nearly 3 million meals were served at more than 1,500 sites statewide, with more than 73,000 kids eating at least one Summer Eats meal on an average day in July. Wow. People across the country are struggling to feed their families because of the rising cost of food and because the big ugly bill made us the largest cut to food assistance in history, said McGovern, Democrat, 2nd Massachusetts Congressional District. But programs like Summer Eats show us that a different future is possible, a future where every child has enough to eat and every family is supported, nourished, and empowered to make healthier decisions. For more than 20 years, the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education and Project Bread have partnered to support meal providers offering summer eats to children across the state. All children and teens 18 and younger can eat at hundreds of sites statewide for free, with no registration or ID required, and another summer food resource is Sunbucks, a federal summer EBT benefit providing additional grocery funding for low-income families with school-age children. This year, Project Bread, the state's leading food security organization, granted more than $250,000 towards Summer Eats sponsors statewide, including the Spanish American Center and the Gil Montague Regional School District in Turner's Falls. Summer Eats provides an incredible opportunity to bring communities together and help take one thing off families' plates, said Project Bread President and CEO Aaron McAleer. This is especially important right now when 40% of Massachusetts households with children are facing food insecurity while navigating the rising costs of groceries, rent, and other necessities. When families, no matter what their income level is, can come to sites in their local park, library, or playground to enjoy a free, nutritious meal, it helps bridge that gap. McGovern and McAleer led the tour, joined by DESE Assistant Director and Food and Nutrition Programs Christina Weber, DESE Community Nutrition's Program Coordinator Shannon Walsh, State Representative Natalie Higgins, SAC Executive Director Natty Latimer, SAC St. Cecilia Church Site Supervisor Donata Martin, and representatives from the Gil Montague Regional School District. The Spanish American Center hosted McGovern and the group at St. Cecilia's Parish on Mechanic Street in Leominster, which houses their summer camp program, Verano Alegre. Kids and teens enjoyed a breakfast of scrambled eggs and French toast while the congressman spoke with them about his role in government and the importance of anti-hunger programs such as Summer Eats, noting that last year the program served nearly 26,000 meals. There are additional Summer Eats sites in Leominster, as well as several locations in Fitchburg, including the MOC Youth Innovation Center at 18 Fairmont Street, the Green Street Playground at 55 North Street, and Park Hill Park at 225 Pratt Road, to name just a few. For more information and a map of all the sites, visit projectbread.org/summereatsprogram or text food or comida to 304-304. Okay. And let's see. Unforgettable day. Local youth attend World Cup. Watch parties in Leominster and Fitchburg coming up. Whoa. You'd be hard-pressed to find someone who hasn't gotten caught up in World Cup fever, and some local youngsters had the experience of a lifetime when they got to go to a game recently. Local World Cup semifinal and final watch parties are coming up at Doyle Field in Leominster on July 15th, which I guess is today, and Sunday, July 19th. A group from the Boys and Girls Club of Fitchburg and Leominster were invited to attend the June 23rd England versus Ghana match at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Governor Maura Healey gifted tickets to the Leominster branch of the nonprofit organization, some of more than 1,100 free FIFA World Club tickets for games in Massachusetts given to youth organizations across the state thanks to a generous donation by Airbnb. Leominster resident Christian Romero was one of those fortunate to get one, a member of the Boys and Girls Club of Fitchburg and Leominster for 2 years and an avid soccer player for longer than that. The seventh grader at Skyview Middle School was thrilled to attend the match that England won 3-0, but the score didn't matter to him. "It was really exciting and fun to watch the game," the 12-year-old said. "One of my favorite parts was celebrating with the Ghanaian fans because they brought so much energy and excitement to the stadium. As I was watching the game, I kept thinking about myself playing on a field like that one day. It inspired me to keep working hard and chasing my dreams of becoming a professional soccer player." His mom, Aladia Romero, got to tag along as a chaperone and said they were thrilled and very appreciative to the governor for the opportunity. "It was truly an amazing experience," she said, adding that she was honored to be asked to serve as a parent chaperone. Romero has served on the Leominster City Council since January and is the regional manager for the office of Congressman Jim McGovern. She remembers thinking when World Cup tickets first went on sale that there was no way she and her son would be able to see a game in person because they were simply out of reach financially. "That's why I was so grateful when Governor Healey announced she was donating tickets to youth-serving organizations, including the Boys and Girls Clubs of Fitchburg and Leominster," she said. She said that the day Christian found out he had been selected to go to the match, he came home overflowing with excitement. Being able to experience this unforgettable day alongside him was an incredible blessing, Romero said. We are deeply thankful to Governor Healey and everyone who made this opportunity possible. The best part? Christian told me that one day when he's playing in the World Cup for the United States or Honduras, he's going to donate tickets to the Boys and Girls Clubs so other kids can experience the same joy. As a parent, there is no greater feeling than seeing your child inspired to dream big and give back. Okay. Well, it's 4:15, time to take our first break, and Stacy will have more after this.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And at the Mass Commission for the Blind, we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Welcome back to Community News for Fitchburg and Leominster and the surrounding area on Audio Journal. And it's time to read the obituaries. So we will begin with this one. Hans George, or George Berger, passed away on July 2nd at the age of 89 in Florida, surrounded by family. George was born on April 22, 1939, in Berlin, Germany, the eldest of five children. In 1949, the family emigrated to the United States, where George proudly embraced his new home. He deeply loved America and served in the United States Army. His commitment to service continued through the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, and he was a proud member of the Masonic Lodge. George had a passion for family and history. He remained connected with relatives in the U.S. and Germany and helped preserve the Berger family heritage for future generations. Later in life, George married Ingrid Landry. Although they had no children together, George embraced her family as his own and remained devoted to them after Ingrid's passing. To nieces and nephews, George was the cool uncle. He had impeccable taste, loved a good party, never missed an opportunity to dance. George is survived by his brothers, Erhard Berger and Fred Berger, his stepsons, Robert Landry, Donald Landry, his stepdaughter, Catherine Glocking, as well as four step-grandchildren. A graveside service with military honors will be held tomorrow in Gainesville, Florida. All right, let's move along to one from Fitchburg, Gene White. Gene White passed away on July 9th, leaving behind a legacy defined by her razor-sharp intellect and unforgettable personality. Jean was never one for sentimentality. Instead, she showed up in the world with an extremely quick wit and a hilariously dry, sarcastic sense of humor. She told it exactly like it was. She never sugarcoated the truth and kept everyone around her on their toes. If you wanted a laugh, a sharp observation, or a straight answer, Jean was unmatched. Jean was the unique centerpiece of a large family. She is survived by her children, Louis Nault, Renee Nault, Jeanette Jakes, Teresa Nault, Francis Nault, Janice Colin, Joanne Currier, and Thomas White. Her distinct spirit, sharp tongue, and comedic timing live on through her grandchildren, who will miss her one-of-a-kind presence and the many laughs she provided over the years. At Jean's request, there will be no funeral arrangements. All right, let's move along here. Charles Letarte. It is with heavy hearts that we share the passing of Charles, or Chuck, Richard Letarte, who passed away after a brief illness on July 4th. Chuck was born on September 19th, 1950, in Leominster. Chuck built his life in Lunenburg, grounded in honesty, hard work, and deep connections with family and community. After graduating from Lunenburg High in 68, Chuck enlisted in the Navy. He served for 4 years aboard the USS Joseph K. Taussig as a damage control technician. Following his service, Chuck became a member and a lifelong brother of the Plumbers and Pipefitters Local 4, where he worked with pride for 32 years. Even in retirement at age 63, Chuck remained active, later joining Dick's Farm Stand, where he continued to build friendship. Above all else, Chuck was a devoted father, husband, and pépère. He met the love of his life, Cynthia Tapley, in 1980, and the two fell in love and married. Together they built a warm and loving home. Chuck was a true jack-of-all-trades and the kind of father every child hopes for. Whether it was kayaking, reading together, or never missing a game, he was always present. Chuck had a remarkable gift for conversation. You could not go anywhere with him without him striking up a conversation with someone new. Beyond his humor, Chuck was intelligent and curious. A devoted patron of the Lunenburg Public Library, he was rarely without a stack of books. From history and true crime to sports, his knowledge seemed limitless. When he wasn't reading in his recliner, with his glasses and a hardcover in hand, he could be found tending his garden or chopping wood, always keeping busy. He's survived by his beloved wife, Cynthia Letart, his son, Jeremy Letart, his son, Jesse Letart, and his son, Jared Letart. He also leaves 7 grandchildren. In accordance with his wishes, there are no calling hours or services. A celebration of life will be held on August 29th from 4:30 to 8:30 at the Old Mill in Westminster, Massachusetts. All who knew and loved Chuck are invited to attend. All right. This one is from Auburn, and it's brief. Michael F. Lessard, 67, passed away on Tuesday, July 7th. Calling hours will be Saturday, July 18th, from 10 until his prayer service at 12 p.m. in the Mercadante Funeral Home and Chapel in Worcester. There's a complete obituary and an online register for messages at www.mercadantefuneral.com. Moving along, Fitchburg. Deputy Chief Patrick James P.J. Roy, 45, passed away peacefully on Wednesday morning, July 8th, at the Rose Monahan Hospice in Worcester. P.J. was born in Fitchburg on October 30th, 1980, and was a lifelong resident of Fitchburg. He was a graduate of Fitchburg High, class of 99. P.J. proudly served the city of Fitchburg. He was known for his dedication, leadership, and unwavering commitment to protecting and serving his community. Firefighting was truly his passion. He enjoyed cooking and often could be found watching the Food Network. He loved going to Hampton Beach and getting a Blink's fried dough. He was always ready to travel and was the life of the party. He never hesitated to lend a hand. He leaves his mother, Denise Roy of Fitchburg, his children, Abigail M. Roy and James A. Roy of Fitchburg, and his significant other, Jen Hero of Ashby. His services were held earlier today. But if you'd like to make a memorial contribution, send it to the Fitchburg Fire Community in Fitchburg. Our next obituary is for Janet Clegg. Janet Clegg passed away peacefully after a long and courageous illness, surrounded by her family. Throughout her journey, she faced life challenges with strength, grace, and resilience. Janet was a longtime resident of both Leominster, Massachusetts, and Crestview, Florida, where she built lasting friendships and touched the lives of many. She found joy in the simple pleasures of life, especially reading a good book, spending time with friends, and making memories with her family. Her kindness, warmth, and quiet strength will be missed. Janet was the mother of two daughters, Tracy Voyer of Leominster and Amy Clegg of Fitchburg. She was also a proud grandmother to three grandchildren and one great-granddaughter. We would like to thank Britt and Sheila from hospice for their amazing care. Services will be private. And this obituary is from Littleton. Joanne, or Jody Carrington, 99, died at Life Care Center of Neshoba Valley on February 20th. Nay, Joanne Miller, Jody was born in Lubbock, Texas, on September 12, 1926, and she never lost her southern warmth or her Texas drawl. Over the course of her life, she lived all over the country, first as an Air Force wife to her first husband, Lou Carrington, and later as the free spirit she was as a divorcee. Jody worked primarily in retail and was last employed selling art supplies in Altadena, California, before moving across the country in 88 when she married the Reverend Dr. Theodore W. Lewis, her friend since they met in Maine in the 60s. They settled in Lunenburg, where they spent most of their 25 years of marriage. She's survived by Ted's children, Michael Lewis and Catherine Lewis, and by three grandchildren. A funeral mass will be held at St. Andrew's Church in Ayr on Friday, July 17th at 11 a.m. All right, that's all the obituaries we have this week. So I think I'm going to read this article on how to avoid a nasty stomach bug. Summertime synonymous with warm weather and outdoor recreational pursuits. It's also a popular time to use that grill instead of the oven and to serve a variety of salads instead of cooked vegetables. Unfortunately, if the contents of that salad haven't been thoroughly washed, people run the risk of contracting a host of rather unpleasant stomach-related illnesses. Cyclosoriasis, I think that's how you say it, is the latest of that lot to appear on state health officials' radar. Created by a stomach parasite, it can lead to, quote, explosive diarrhea, among other symptoms. As of the latest surveillance, health officials have not identified a single multi-state contaminated food item linking all the cases. While the source of the outbreak has not been identified, State Department of Public Health said past outbreaks have been linked to fresh produce such as raspberries, basil, cilantro, scallions, snow peas, and bagged salads. The Department of Public Health says there's been 18 cases reported in Massachusetts since the start of May. A handful of cyclosporiasis cases are reported in the state every year, the agency said. If not treated, the illness may last from a few days to over a month. Symptoms, which can also include weight loss, bloating, nausea, vomiting, and tiredness, can last for several weeks and can cause a relapse where someone feels better only to get sick again. People in poor health or those who are immunocompromised may be at a higher risk for severe or long illness. State health officials say people will start to have diarrhea, nausea, bloating, and cramps 1 to 2 weeks after exposure. If you suspect you've contracted cyclosporiasis, reach out to your health care provider or your local board of health. Diagnosis requires stool testing, and the illness is treated with a combination antibiotic along with rest and fluids. Along with testing, take these precautionary steps. Thoroughly rinse all fresh produce under clean running water. For firm fruits and vegetables, like melons and cucumbers, use a clean produce brush. Heating food to 158 degrees Fahrenheit kills the parasite. Wash and sanitize cutting boards and utensils. Fruits and vegetables that are labeled pre-washed do not need to be washed again. Cut away any damaged or bruised areas on fruits and vegetables. Refrigerate cut, peeled, or cooked fruits and vegetables as soon as possible or within 2 hours. There's another way the parasite could infect humans. I think it's entirely possible you could have outbreaks associated with swimming in pools, said University of Michigan microbiology and immunology professor Vern Carruthers. Fortunately, the illness responds well to antibiotics. All right, it's 4:30. We'll take a little break, and Priscilla will have more news for you in a moment.
Do you need to contact the Massachusetts Attorney General's Office? The Attorney General's Office deals with a wide range of issues, including elder services, civil rights, fair labor, health care, insurance and financial services, housing, open meeting laws, public charities, and victim compensation. If you aren't sure who to call, an information specialist can direct you if you call the main switchboard. The main switchboard is 617-727-2200. Once again, that's 617-727-2200.
And we're back. You're listening to Community News, Fitchburg Lemonster, a production of the Audio Journal. Okay, here's Sally Cragen's Pet Talk column. Question today, dear Pet Talk, it's going to be a hot summer, and we'd love to bring our dogs swimming. Generally, what are the rules about bringing your pet to a place where they can swim? Signed, Devoted Dog Mom. Dear Devoted Dog Mom, years ago, there were no rules as regards bringing your dog to the ocean, lake, pond, stream, or pretty much anywhere. In Massachusetts state parks, dogs are allowed in many places on leash, and up to 4 dogs are allowed per person. However, I found no indication that dogs were allowed in the water at state-run parks, but many parks do offer off-leash areas for dogs. The rules require that dogs remain within sight of the owner, come immediately if called, stay at the owner's command, and does not charge or chase people, dogs, horses, or wildlife, and is leashed when entering or exiting an off-leash area. The owner should have one leash in hand for each dog, and this information can be found at mass.gov/guidesdogsindcrparks. But let's begin with the ocean. If you're going to the seashore in New England, you'll be able to look up the rules for the beach in the town you plan to visit. Most beaches charge a daytime admission, and dogs are not allowed. However, after hours can be another story. For example, town beaches on the Outer Cape, which include Wellfleet, Truro, and Provincetown, provide for dog owners by having a poop bag dispenser at the entrance. The local custom is that people may bring their dogs after hours on a leash or running free. Our family was happy to bring our dog Sarju down to the shore. She loved running into the waves, whether they were large or small, and she really enjoyed encountering other happy dogs who also enjoyed frolicking in the sand and running into the water. As for visiting a lake, where there may not be admission or monitoring, keep your dog on a leash, especially if it is their first time. There will be posted leash rules, but if your dog gets free, make sure you have them trained to a reliable recall when they are off leash or near water. Speaking of first time, some dogs do not or cannot learn to swim. The larger breeds, which were bred to be in water, such as spaniels, retrievers, labs, and so on, will probably dive happily into the foamy brine. That's unlikely to be the case with smaller pups or the very large breeds. If your dog is hesitant, slow your walking, use a soft and soothing voice, and consider giving reassuring pets and treats. Lakes may not be totally safe if there is algae bloom. Cyanobacteria is harmful to dogs, and do not allow your dog to drink lake water. Always bring a portable bowl with water to share with your pup. Sounds good. Okay. Let's see. Here's a Tanglewood bus trip planned for July 26th from Fitchburg. The Finnish Center at Saema Park, is offering residents the opportunity to enjoy a summer day trip to the beautiful Tanglewood Music Center in Lenox on Sunday, July 26th. The trip will feature a performance by the Boston Symphony Orchestra with young violin virtuoso Himari Yoshimura, who is recognized for her incredible technique, playful and imaginative interpretations, and ability to convey emotional depth, according to the BSO website. The program will include Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5 and Mozart Violin Concerto No. 1. A Wilson coach bus equipped with a restroom will depart from Twin City Kmart Plaza in Fitchburg at 11 a.m. and return at 7 p.m. The concert begins at 2:30 p.m. and this is on the 26th. The cost is $95 per person and includes transportation, driver gratuity, and a concert ticket in the Kusavitsky Music Shed. Participants may bring a picnic to enjoy on the grounds or purchase food at Tanglewood. Reservations can be made by emailing finnishcenter@yahoo.com or by calling or texting 978-407-9690. Payment by check or money order should be sent to Finnish Center at Saema Park, P.O. Box 33, Fitchburg, Mass. 01420. Please write Tanglewood on the memo line. For more information about the Finnish Center at Saema Park, visit Finnish Center at Saema Park or Facebook Friends of Saema Park. And let's see. Why health span matters just as much as lifespan. The Mayo Clinic physicians are working hard to change how clinicians and patients think about aging. A new publication in Mayo Clinic Proceedings outlines a new framework for health span, the years of life spent in good health with preserved function, cognition, and independence. The paper, co-authored by Christina Chen, M.D., a Mayo Clinic physician in internal medicine and geriatrics, and Sarah Bones, M.D., argues that living longer is not necessarily the same as living well and explores how a greater focus on health span could reshape medical care. Here, Dr. Chen discusses the research and its implications for patients and clinicians. Patients often say, "I want to live to be 100," and that is a meaningful goal, but living longer may not be the same as living well. Health span is about how well you live during those years, your ability to function independently, think clearly, and maintain a good quality of life. It shifts the focus from simply adding years to making sure those years are meaningful. Doctors have been very successful at extending lifespan, but less effective at preserving the quality of those added years. What we are seeing in clinical practice is that many people are living longer with chronic disease, reduced mobility, cognitive impairment, and increasing dependence. That gap between years lived and years lived well is growing, and it is something clinicians see every day. When we equate living longer with living better, care can become too focused on disease alone. We may not pay enough attention to one's functional abilities, cognitive health, the ability to remain independent at home, the things that patients value most. Traditional measures like lab values or survival rates do not tell us whether someone can manage their daily activities, stay socially connected, or continue living safely and independently. That is a critical gap in how we define success in medicine. Health span becomes actionable when we start measuring additional domains like physical function, cognitive health, and independence in a consistent way. We have already had practical tools to do this, things like gait speed, grip strength, balance assessments, cognitive screening, and patient-reported outcomes. These are validated measures that can be incorporated into routine care and give us a much clearer picture of how patients are actually doing. When we also prioritize measuring these domains alongside thoughtful preventive care, we can track them over time and use them to guide clinical decisions in a way that aligns with what patients care about most. How could a focus on health span change patient care? A health span-focused approach shifts the goal of care toward helping patients stay independent, mobile, and clear-minded for as long as possible. It also changes how we talk to patients. Instead of focusing only on treating disease, we can frame care around how to preserve function, cognition, and overall well-being so they're able to live well with dignity. That shift helps patients better understand the purpose behind recommendations and can improve engagement in their care. What should patients and clinicians be thinking about differently? We can start by changing the conversation, and it begins with the words we use. Instead of asking only how to extend life, we can ask how to help patients live well. What are their goals, and how can we help them reach those goals? That includes preserving the ability to perform everyday activities, maintain social connections, and continue living independently. Small changes in how we talk about that care can help patients see the goal is not just longevity, but living with quality, dignity, and purpose. What are the next steps for this research? Our goal is to make health span something we can measure and track in everyday clinical practice. If we can do that, we can better align care with outcomes that truly impact patients' lives. The next steps include developing standardized metrics, integrating them across specialties, and designing care models that prioritize function, independence, and long-term quality of life. Okay. And let's see, from Shirley. Shirley's Sustainable Coffee Roasters. Wavelength Coffee uses solar-powered electric air roasting tech. Husband and wife Jim and Deanna Varney are the founders of Wavelength Coffee Roasters, a specialty coffee company based in town that is built around sustainability and innovation. After spending more than two decades in industrial design and engineering, Jim left the biotech and product development world to pursue a passion for coffee and environmental sustainability. They launched Wavelength at 2 Shaker Road late last year with a clear goal: rethink how coffee gets sourced, roasted, and packaged. Coffee is part of people's daily lives, which makes it a powerful place to make meaningful change, Jim said. We saw an opportunity to rethink the process from the ground up, using better technology and more sustainable practices to create a better cup. The Shirley-based company delivers a smoother cup while reducing environmental impact at every step by building sustainability into every stage of production. Wavelength sources beans from forward-thinking farmers who use innovative growing methods to address climate and environmental challenges, and uses all-electric air roasting technology powered in part by solar energy rather than traditional gas-powered drum roasters. After roasting, they package their coffee in reusable, fully recyclable steel cans, containers that reduce waste and keep coffee fresher longer than traditional bags. Their taste and planet-friendly practices are catching on with both customers and retailers, cafes and restaurants interested in offering a more sustainable coffee option to their customers. Every decision we make connects back to our mission, Deanna said. We want customers to feel good about what they're drinking, not just how it tastes, but how it's made. Customers can purchase Wavelength Coffee Roasters products online and from select Massachusetts retailers, including Concord Market, Wilson Farm in Lexington, Marshview Farm General Store in Essex, and Revival Cafe in Cambridge. In addition, they will be at farmers markets in Acton, Marlborough, and Westford throughout the summer. The company is actively expanding its retail footprint and invites store owners, cafes, and restaurant operators to connect about carrying Wavelength coffee and hosts tastings and cupping events at its Shirley Roastery, giving customers a chance to experience the difference firsthand. For more information, call 978-257-4037, visit wavelength-coffee.com, and follow Wavelength Coffee on Facebook and Instagram. Okay. Well, we're coming up on 4:45. I don't have time to read another article, so we'll take a short break, or a last break, and Stacy will be back to finish up the hour.
Would you like to hear news from Charlton, Southbridge, and Sturbridge that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Wednesday at 5 p.m.
Welcome back to the last section of community news for the Fitchburg and Leominster area on Audio Journal. Well, here's an article about celebrating. Groton celebrates America's 250th. Destination Groton invites residents and visitors to attend Voices of Revolution, Groton's Legacy, at Bunker Hill and beyond on Sunday, July 19th, a special Massachusetts 250 event celebrating Groton's pivotal role in the American Revolution. The free event begins at 12 p.m. on the Groton Town Common with a Revolutionary War reenactment featuring the 6th Middlesex Regiment and the Concord Fife and Drum Corps. At 1 p.m., attendees will go to the Richardson Mies Performing Center at Lawrence Academy for an afternoon of presentation by leading historians and authors, followed by a reception. The event is funded in part through a generous grant from the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism's MA250 grant program. All right, I think that's all the information you will need. It says admission is free, but advance registration is encouraged. And if you'd like to learn more or reserve a seat, visit destinationgroton.com/RSVP. Sounds like a great event. All right. Moving on. This article is entitled, It is a Great Love Story. It's from Pepperell. For the vast majority of people who get onto an airplane, they will experience the exact same number of takeoffs and landings. For three generations of the Sylvia family, they've taken off in planes thousands of times, but they have experienced far few landings. Justin Sylvia and his son Joe Sylvia have both made lifelong careers out of skydiving. Each of them has logged thousands of jumps across their respective careers, with both now running their own skydiving companies in different parts of the country. Justin runs Chattanooga Skydiving Company in Tennessee, while Joe owns Skydive Pepperell. On Saturday, which is World Skydiving Day, both of them plan to be among the tens of thousands of people worldwide working to break the world record for the most skydives in a single day. The number to beat is 30,351 jumps. The Sylvia's family tradition of parachuting out of airplanes began not as a thrill-seeking venture, but as a duty held by Justin's father, Vin Sylvia, who served in the U.S. Army's 82nd Airborne Division during World War II. It wasn't until he was 22 that Justin made his first jump, which he did after his brother, Frank Sylvia, invited him to do so up in Pepperell. Frank had started skydiving when he was 15, and by 1984, when he asked Justin to do a jump, he had logged more than 1,000 jumps on his own. It has been a very fulfilling life. When you find something you enjoy and can turn it into your business, you will never work a day in your life, said Justin, who has made roughly 14,500 jumps. Joe began his skydiving journey a bit earlier in life than his father. Now 38, Joe grew up around the hobby. When he was 10, he was deemed big enough to pack parachutes for other jumpers. When he was 12, he made his first jump. He said he was nervous, but perhaps less so because of how familiar the whole thing was to him. Justin and Joe will be among thousands of people falling from the sky across the globe Saturday, all with parachutes strapped to their backs, of course. To break the 2024 jump record, Joe said the strategy in Pepperell will be simple. We're going to skydive as much as we can. We're just going to be skydiving all day. The father-son pair have their bases of operation in different parts of the country, but Joe spoke highly of his father's commitment to the sport, even at 64. I think it is so cool that he is in his 60s and still doing it, still showing up for it, and we get to share it together, said Joe. Well, that's an unusual family connection, isn't it? This article is from Fitchburg. It's entitled, Everybody to Become One. Two recent events in the city highlighted the power of community. The annual Fitchburg Juneteenth Community Collaborative was moved from the Senior Center to Riverside Park this year and held as a festival. A large crowd came out for the event that featured prayer, song, food, entertainment, and remarks by Mayor Sam Sequoyah. Juneteenth, also called Black Freedom Day, commemorates June 19, 1865, the day enslaved people in Galveston, Texas, finally received word of their freedom more than 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was issued by President Lincoln. It was created as a federal holiday in 2021. Belmer, a Fitchburg resident who is part of the organizing team, wears many hats, including pastor and founder of the Galilee Spiritual Life Center. And he is also the Treehouse Music Education Program founder and executive director. She said that the Juneteenth event is a celebration of life made possible because of the collaboration between many people and organizations in the community to work to ensure that it continues. The festival was part of a full lineup of Juneteenth celebrations in the city, including the Juneteenth flag raised that morning at Riverfront Park, a parade and historical tour, a Juneteenth program at the Fitchburg Abolitionist Park, and the Buy Black Market at Fitchburg City Hall. Gathering of Hearts at the Fitchburg Abolitionist Park back in May was full of traditional dance, music, prayer, and spoken reflections led by cultural groups, community organizations, and faith leaders. Rising Fitchburg High School senior Diego Barahona and members of his youth indigenous group put together the event that brought together residents of the city. When asked how it went, the 17-year-old said, "Amazing." Ahead of the gathering, Barahona said he wanted to introduce the community to traditions of peaceful cultural protest practiced throughout Puerto Rico, the Caribbean, and Central America. The Gathering of Hearts was an initiative that was inspired by the amount of indigenous people I saw holding protests to advocate for their people. I wanted to do something more, not just scream and shout, but actually help reverse what damage our current administration is causing, because I refuse to be a bystander and regret not standing up for what I strongly know is right. Barahona said they did just that, and he is grateful to everyone who joined him in tranquil solidarity. We kept an air of peace, mourning, prayer, and community throughout the entire time, the young man said. This event warmed my heart, and it warmed many other people's hearts as well. All right, we just have a short time here. So let's see if I've got a short article for you. Well, let's see how much of this we can read. Teens jump into activities. A group of kids from Leominster's Spanish American Center enjoyed a roller skating outing in May thanks to a local nonprofit whose mission is to provide activities for youth. Just Understand My Potential, or JUMP, is a charitable organization funded by a grant managed through the United Way. JUMP Executive Director Bill Spacciapoli said that since the COVID-19 pandemic, they have been partnered almost exclusively with the Spanish American Center to engage young people in endeavors that include hiking, indoor rock climbing, and ice skating. A group of people from the United Way, the Spanish American Center, and JUMP staff all work to ensure this disadvantaged population have these opportunities for fun and personal growth. He disclosed that as an adult, he had a need instilled by his parents to give back to the community. He formed JUMP in 2005, and 2 years later, it was incorporated. JUMP had a lot of success because we had leadership everywhere. And whenever I turned around, one of my teammates was sticking out their hand to help. The board, the volunteers, and the donors. Last summer, they brought a group of youngsters on a trip to Mount Cardigan in the Lakes region of New Hampshire. The upside is we now have expanded age groups we work with and improved quality of programming, and we have a great board of directors, Spacciapoli said. We are just now resuming operations after COVID, and we'll be getting kids outside starting later this month. These past 20 years of JUMP has altered the life of many youth, Spacciapoli said. The future is bright. All right, that's about all we have time for today. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, you can call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Stacy Lanier. I've been reading today with Priscilla Lanigan. Stay tuned for more community news from Sturbridge, Southbridge, and Charlton, coming up in a moment after this program. Thank you for listening. We'll see you here next week.
This is Bird Note. Out in the North Pacific, an albatross flies in the wake of our ship. This large bird has a wingspan of about 7 feet, and it's completely at home in the harsh winds of the open ocean. It soars back and forth above the ship's wake, sometimes rising up to 100 feet in the air, then coasting right back down near the surface. With its wings just slightly arched, an albatross can go for more than a day without flapping even once. So how does this work? How can it keep up with the boat without flapping its wings? The albatross knows how to use differences in wind speed to coast through the sky, a feat called dynamic soaring. Due to friction with the waves, the speed of the wind close to the water's surface is much slower than it is higher up. By moving from the faster high air to the slower low air, or vice versa, the albatross is propelled forward. And so, in a series of sinuous loops, the albatross surfs the wind up and down, repeating the pattern over and over again as it moves thousands of miles across the ocean. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Sarah Murner and Craig McKibben from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
The Worcester Regional Transit Authority, also known as the WRTA, is a regional transit system that services the city of Worcester and the surrounding 36 communities in the central Massachusetts area, with a bus fleet that includes all-electric buses, as well as many diesel-electric hybrid buses. The second largest regional transit authority in Massachusetts, the WRTA offers reliable, comfortable, and safe transportation for traveling to work, shopping, school, medical appointments, and leisure activities. The WRTA also provides paratransit service for the elderly and disabled, as well as a variety of special services for those groups in the entire service area. For more information, visit the website at www.therta.com or call 508-791-9782.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.